philosopher and Buddhist scholar Joanna Macy on Eco Justice Radio. Thank you so much, Joanna.
Thank you, Carrie. Lovely to be with you.
We appreciate your wisdom.
Hey, listeners. To check out the extended recording of this show or to explore our other shows, visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, and subscribe to our podcast. This has been Eco Justice Radio and our show, Joanna Macy on The Great Turning. Thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please connect with us on social media at Eco Justice Radio, SoCal350, and Wilder Utopia. If you like what you've heard and you want others to be informed, subscribe and share the episodes. You have been listening to Eco Justice Radio, a project of SoCal 350. Executive producer and host, myself, Jack Eit. Co-host, Jessica Aldridge. Co-host, Carrie Kim. And engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of our lungs on www.kboo.fm. Thanks for tuning in.
Tune into KBOO every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Query. Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore artists across time and genre.
She's on my mind every hour of every day.
That's Query every third Saturday at 10 p.m. on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. And I lose control, think
I follow home. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hi, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and this is Life Stamps, stories from here and there. I'm Joseph.
I am Tyson.
Join us every other Thursday at 10 a.m. as we discuss exciting destinations around the world. They're not always from personal experience, but never without cultural awareness and a passion for travel. Welcome to today's show. This is 90.7 FM Portland. You're listening to Life Stamps, stories from here and there. Sorry, 90.7 FM KBOO.
Very good, and Joseph.
It's been a little while, I guess, but yeah, welcome to Life Stamps. So Tyson is going to take us on a journey through India, specifically on the Maharashtra Splendor train line. So Tyson, why did you choose this topic today?
Well, I was looking for an interesting train route to talk about, you know, for different destinations along the way and stuff. And this is actually probably not appeal or would say it is appealing, but it may not be in the price point for a lot of people I know, because this is actually a luxury travel. So think of it more.
Is it a banana?
What?
Well, because it's appealing.
Oh, it's appealing, but no, it's a train. It's not a banana.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
So the train is appealing.
Right. It looks nothing like a banana.
Ah, gotcha.
It's like got carriages and cars, and like it goes on this like track.
So it's not like the train version of a banana boat?
No. But anyways, for people that are interested in learning some different routes through the country of India via...
No trout on the train, right?
Yeah, no. Via different routes within the country of India, mm-hmm. for luxury train travel, and all the all-inclusive itineraries that are included with it, mm-hmm. a very good website for that is www.DeccanOdysseyTrain.com.
How do you spell that, Deccan?
DECCAN.
Hmm.
Odyssey, ODYSSEY, train.com.
So it's www.DeccanOdysseyTrain.com.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, that's exactly it. And on there, you'll find like about 9 different Indian train routes. They all seem to be about 7 nights and 8 days,
mm-hmm.
you know, so roughly a full week. They're all
is that totally on the train, a full week on the train?
But you have all these stops along the way, and then all these excursions that are part of the train route, mm-hmm. that are included. Everything's included pretty much.
Mm.
The only thing I can say that may not be included when you stop at certain towns and villages, mm-hmm. and maybe if you're like doing some street food or something, or anything that's like a little bit off program from what's in the all-inclusive program,
mm-hmm.
Would be also like what you would pay out of pocket. And
I see.
And it's quite pricey, but I thought it was actually kind of interesting because of the diversity of the tour, especially the one I researched, which is called the Maharashtra Splendor Line.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go on to www.DeccanOdysseyTrain.com, you'll see there's about 9 different train. It's like royal train travel through India, mm-hmm. essentially.
Okay.
So yeah, and they're usually, these tours are about 7 to nights and 8 days long.
Mm-hmm.
It's about $10,000 per person.
Oh, okay.
So it's
quite spendy.
It's quite spendy, but mm-hmm. it is including everything for those whole 7 to 8 days, and you get to see different parts of the country, you know, through the countryside via train travel,
mm-hmm.
and stuff. So yeah, and it also includes your pickup and drop off to the starting station.
I see.
You know, so like wherever. So for example, on this train route, you start and end in Mumbai.
Mm-hmm.
So they would pick you up. If you're going straight from the airport, they pick you up from the airport and take you mm-hmm. to the train station and welcome you on aboard. If it's from your hotel, they pick you up from your hotel, welcome you all aboard. And then when the whole thing's over, they'll take you back to your hotel or take you back to the airport.
So is there anything that makes this, like, you know, among other luxury train experiences, is there anything that makes the Maharashtra Splendor route more unique?
I don't know a lot about luxury train travel. I know people talk about the Orient Express and how mm-hmm. that takes you through Southeast Asia and through some of the jungle regions and just some of the like the different temples and stuff, I think, within mm-hmm. Malay and Indonesia, mm-hmm. perhaps, and stuff like this. So, yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
So I found this one interesting. So I guess it's best to say... I'm going to just tell you the rough route right now.
Okay.
And then we'll go into further detail about all these stops along the way.
Okay.
But you're going to start in Mumbai.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to go to, like a holy village
mm-hmm.
called Nashik.
Okay.
You're going to go to, a UNESCO heritage, UNESCO voted, cave site called the Ellora Caves.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to go to a place called the Ajanta Caves.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to go to sort of like a cultural city called Kolhapur. Then you're going to go to Goa.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to go to another ocean village area called Sindhuburg.
Mm.
And then you'll finish off back in Mumbai.
I see.
And I think this is an interesting breakup because you do get some city, you get some nature, you get some ancient history. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of stuff that's actually covered in this because, as you know, India is very, very culturally diverse with different regions and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so this one is called the Maharashtra Splendor because, for the most part, it's a very big state within India is Maharashtra. Mm-hmm. And
so it's all within the Maharashtra state.
For the most part.
Okay.
I think Goa is technically its own region as well. So when you go down to the Goa part, I think that's like you're technically going just to a little bit of another state within India. Mm-hmm. And I think when you go to the second cave site, I think you're just right on the border of Maharashtra and potentially like one other Indian state or something like this and stuff. So, yeah, so like I was saying, the $10,000 does cover pretty much everything. It's your pick up and drop off for the journey. It's your entrance fee to all the excursions. It includes all the shuttles or buses or private drivers that take pick you up off the train depot and takes you out on the excursion and stuff. Then there's also, if you have minor, if you have travel insurance, there is a doctor on board to take care of like minor things, you know, like stomach indigestion or anything, to like the food that's provided for you on the train and stuff, you know. So, and it's all traditional Indian food, you know, so like they do traditional Indian breakfasts when you start every morning. If you're coming back, like if you're only doing like a morning trip, like as like one of the stop offs, and you come back and have lunch on the train, then that's all like traditional Indian food for lunch. And then you're always having dinner on the train because they don't really have a single day trip from the train where you'll be taking dinner like in one of the places. You're always going to come back and relax and come back to your cabin and hang out at the bar. And then I think there's also a spa on the train.
I see.
So
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's often compared to like a 5-star hotel on wheels.
Yeah, essentially. And, yeah. But you know, but the scenes always change, and you know, it's like, I think it's a little nicer than a cruise from the way it sounds to me, because I'm not the kind of person who likes to just be out on the ocean all the time. And, well, I've never done like any of those luxury cruises either, but I would do this before I would do a luxury cruise.
Yeah, I've heard the term land cruise to describe like long distance Amtrak trains. I feel like this could be sort of like even more so a land cruise in terms of like hospitality and, you know, like the stay and everything, you know, the service and all of that.
Yeah. And I also want to reiterate on that. They have $10,000 USD is roughly what we're looking at.
Yeah.
They say you can single cabin on what was kind of called the luxury suite on the train by yourself for about $7,000. But if you take it as a double, then it could be about, you know, more like 10,000. So it could be like, you know, you're with your significant other doing this, it could be about 5,000 per person, give or take, maybe a little bit more. I would honestly probably budget 1,500, you know, if you were doing this and stuff, because you would be sharing a luxury suite, two bedroom. But the private can be a bit cheaper, but I just kind of roughly said $10,000.
Okay.
Now, there are presidential suites on the train as well, and that's going to be almost like double the price.
Okay. Okay. So, like, $10,000 might be more on the lower end is what you're saying?
Really, the difference that I saw from the pictures is square footage of the carriage, private bathroom as opposed to a shared hallway like bathroom suite or something, and cotton bedding versus silk bedding. So that's like, I think you're paying almost like $1,000 more, or a few thousand dollars more for just that.
Wow. So it's just like just a little bit more luxurious.
Yeah.
A little bit more private.
Yeah. A bit more nicer. Square footage. Yeah. The presidential suites compared to the luxury suites.
I see.
On these trains and stuff, you know. But yeah. So on DeccanOdysseyTrain.com, there's a lot of great pictures that just kind of show different things with the trains and, you know, how they operate and stuff.
So is there anything that people should be aware of, or like something that they should expect, or like anything that might be unexpected, you know, that you should prepare for? I know you mentioned the food might be like, you know, difficult for some people to get used to.
Yeah, I'm not sure. They do have, you can't specify, you know, religious or other dietary restrictions on your itinerary, obviously, because these are quite expensive packages and stuff. So they can work around and accommodate that, you know, especially for people that may not be able to stomach all the spices of like traditional Indian cuisine while on the train. So I think that's about it, really. Like I said, there, if something major happens, I don't know how they what they do. Maybe they will shuttle you back to Mumbai if you had like a major health problem with your travel or whatever. But you know, but they should be handling minor things. They do have a doctor on board and stuff, you know, that should be handling that stuff.
I see.
So pretty much, I'd say most everything's kind of, you know, taken care of. Because it is like southwestern India, Maharashtra. The best times of year that are recommended are kind of like from October to March. It's way too hot in like the later spring, summer months.
I see.
And stuff, you know. And so,
so would that be a high season? Like, would you expect it to be busier during that time?
Yeah, I think so, because of the fact that you just, you know, I think this is somewhat more catered to Western tourism, you know, that aren't acclimated to the climate. So,
yeah,
you know, and that's a big draw. But there are definitely many, you know, royal families and stuff within India that also take advantage of this type of excursionary stuff year round as well, you know. So, yeah. So, I mean, essentially that's kind of all of it, you know. It's also kind of interesting, but you know, India as a country has like a pretty old like railroad history and stuff. And is that Harvey? I think he's poking me.
Harvey's knocking on the door.
Harvey must have something to say about trains. What you got, Harvey?
Back in my day, it was quite a joy to ride the trains with my fellow robot friends. Now, what is commonly considered a slower way to travel, I still enjoy the feeling of the wind on my circuits. So, let's talk about the Indian Railways. The Indian Railways has a rich and fascinating history that spans over 160 years. The first train in India ran on April 16, 1853, between Mumbai and Thane, covering a distance of 34 kilometers. This marked the beginning of a revolutionary transportation system that would transform the country's economy, culture, and people. The British East India Company played a significant role in introducing railways to India, with Lord Dalhousie, the then Governor General of India, proposing the construction of a network of trunk lines to facilitate the transportation of goods and people. The Indian Railways was initially owned and operated by private companies, but the British government took control in the late 19th century. Over the years, the Indian Railways has undergone significant transformations, including the introduction of electric trains, the expansion of the network to remote areas, and the modernization of infrastructure. Today, the Indian Railways is one of the largest railway networks in the world, employing over 1.2 million people and carrying millions of passengers every day.
All right. Thank you, Harvey, for sharing that history of the Indian Railways. Tyson, so what were your takeaways from that?
Well, you know, the Indian Railway history goes back pretty far. It almost seems to be about roughly the inception of, you know, the invention of the train and stuff. So I found that to be quite interesting. It is kind of funny that, you know, the British had their hands in it with their, you know, their colonialism. They're like, oh, yeah, well, we want to just, you know, make sure that all these trains are like under one crane. crown, and so we can move the spices and goods through.
Well, I think
the
it's because of British colonialism that they have that the railways were built in the first place.
No, no, but Harvey specifically said that they were originally
they were consolidated.
They were individual private
probably
companies.
Like different companies, and then and then the crown just consolidated it all.
Yeah, then the crown consolidated it all, obviously, you know, to work with their colonial shipping and exporting and stuff of the East India Trade Company. I didn't really think of, I don't normally think of like Asian countries of having this long-standing history with railroads and stuff, so I did find that pretty interesting, you know, that goes back almost as far as, you know, the United States for railroad history and stuff like that, so I found that to be pretty cool. But moving on from, you know, the historical parts of the Indian railways, let's dive into this route. You know, I talked about the itinerary, and now we'll just talk about the good stuff, you know, the things you're going to see along the Maharashtra Splendor.
Yeah, so I just want to do a little bit of a recap. So the Maharashtra Splendor is a unique train, or a luxury train route that goes through the Maharashtra state. And it goes through areas like, so it starts in Mumbai and then it goes through Nashik, Jaunta, Kolhapur, Goa, and a few other places.
There's another cave site in there that you're missing, and then you're
Ellora and Ajanta, right?
Yeah, and then your last stop before heading back to Mumbai is a place called Sindhudurg.
Sindhudurg, okay.
Yeah, which so, sounds kind of Dutch to me, but. Let's
go ahead and talk about these different places. So where's the first stop?
Well, so we'll assume you're going to fly into Mumbai and probably acclimate and spend a few days in there. Mumbai is India's financial capital and largest city. It's pretty much the New York of India, Mumbai. It has a lot of diversity, vibrant lifestyle, and it's the home to Bollywood. So, you know, Mumbai has a major economic motor for the country. You know, Mumbai really is just the melting pot entertainment capital of India and stuff. Also within Mumbai is where you're going to find the most diversity of street food and stuff. You know, it's considered actually like some of the best street food in the world, you know, in Mumbai in terms of diversity and world-class street food and stuff. Key landmarks that one would see while they're in Mumbai would be Bollywood itself, the Gateway of India, which I'm thinking is just like a royal arch famous structure, and then Marine Drive, which is probably essentially like an esplanade, a Malecon kind of thing within the city.
What's it called again?
Marine Drive,
okay.
Yeah, and then the railway station is actually considered one of the most beautiful railway stations in the world also. So just, you know, if you want to see it before you actually go there to take the train or something, it's worth a walk around and stuff. And that famous railway station is called Chhatrapati Shivaji Terminus. So it's Chhatrapati Shivaji Terminus. And so those are different things you can do in Mumbai. Obviously there's a lot more covered in that, you know, it's a massive city.
Would you recommend like taking a few days to explore the city before going on this train route?
Yeah, because the train route's going to be a lot more about the relaxation.
Especially if you're flying from overseas, you might be jet lagged, so you might need a few days anyway just to adjust.
I think so, because I don't think you would want to like really want to do a lot of the Mumbai exploring after the train.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you're going to be jumping into the hustle and bustle after like, you know, like a 7-day relaxing tour and stuff, you know. So you might not want to really, or you may be getting itchy feet potentially and really want to do a lot of like city exploring, city hustling and stuff after this excursion. But I would probably acclimate, do a lot of the walking tours and a lot of the city stuff, you know, and everything, you know. But going back to the all-inclusive thing, mind you, everything that's all-inclusive has to do directly with the train. So you're not going to get any kind of voucher credits or anything for museums or anything within Mumbai.
I see.
Sadly. But
so it's all, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm guessing if you're willing to drop $10,000 on a train ride, then you know, you could probably afford a few museums in the city.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Just saying, just putting that out there.
Right. But I will say that I really like this tour out of all the other ones that I was looking at on DeccanOdysseyTrain.com, because it seemed to have the breakup and the variety of, like, between nature and cultural places and somewhat adventure stuff seemed to really fit the bill to me. This one sort of had, like, all hit all the notes and from the itinerary.
Okay, so yeah, let's go into the destinations. What's the first stop?
Well, so they'll pick you up and put you on the train in the evening from Mumbai, and then you'll have, like, a traditional thali dinner. You know, that's essentially like an Indian dinner that has a lot of different lentils and veggie curries and stuff, and rice, and then usually like a one protein or something, you know, if you've ever had a thali dinner at like an Indian restaurant and stuff with naan bread and stuff like this. So you'll have a very royal kind of dinner, get welcomed onto the train. I think all the drinks are all inclusive in the bar, you know, get set up with your room and everything. So then you'll just kind of, I think the train will depart at like 7 p.m. or something and make and do the overnight to arrive at Nashik the next day.
Okay.
So that's kind of, you're just, you know, checking in the train, doing your thing. And then when you arrive in Nashik the next day, this is considered the wine capital of India with lots of vineyards. So this is a day where you'll be doing wine tasting.
Okay, that's interesting.
And it's also,
I never thought India is a wine region.
Yeah, yeah. This area of India, Nashik region, is considered, yeah, the kind of like the wine capital of India. They're famous for Chardonnay, Shiraz, and Chenin grapes in the vineyards.
Okay.
And stuff. And so this day's itinerary, and it's also like a spiritual village in a way with a river area. So your morning starts with like a traditional walk along the Godavari Ghats, which is kind of like the holy river of the city, so you get to see the Hindu people of faith in the morning just kind of doing their prayer and meditations and stuff on the river, and you walk around the town and just kind of soak in like the calm spiritual vibes of the place. And then around noon, that's when you walk through the vineyards, and then you'll have like an afternoon lunch at the Sula Vineyards of Nashik at 2 p.m. And then that's kind of like a little longer than a half day excursion that day.
Okay.
And then after lunch, they'll take you from the vineyard and then back to the train. So you can relax and unwind for a little bit before dinner service begins. And then you're taking the night route again. Pretty much every time it's going to be, the train's going to take off like kind of like in that like 6 to 9 p.m. hour, where you can kind of like enjoy like the sights of the road.
Typically overnight trains.
Yeah, but you'll get like about 3 hours of like seeing nice settings with sunsets and stuff, rolling through the Indian countryside every evening till the sunsets, you know, say like, you know, 8 p.m. or so.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, so usually dinner should be with like a sunset view, I would say.
That's
every
cool.
evening and stuff, you know. I guess depending
so
on
the
time of year.
Are all the destinations about like 10-ish hours on by train apart?
Ooh, I guess so. That's a good question. It's definitely a shorter passage in some cases, I would say. But I think in most cases you are kind of going. I think no, there's sometimes where you're actually on the train for like, you may be leaving in like at lunchtime. Yeah, for example, so that's a good question, because you'll arrive the next morning at the village of Aurangabad. Aurangabad is where the village where the Ellora caves are just not too far from. So, and these are beautiful. If you ever see pictures of them, they look like Petra in Jordan. So they're just really intricate cave carvings.
Oh, that's super
you
cool.
You know, with just all this kind of like traditional like Indian history and stuff, Sanskrit stuff, you know, carved into the pillars of the rock pillars of the caves and stuff. And so when you do this day, it's actually only a half day excursion to the cave site mm-hmm. leaving in the morning. So you'll have breakfast on the train. They'll pick you up, and then you'll go and explore that, you know, till about midday or whatever. And then they'll bring you back to the train for like an afternoon lunch mm-hmm. at like 1 or 2 p.m. or something.
Okay.
So in this case, you're going to be on the train having lunch and leaving earlier, and so you'll get more vistas and more views on that day from via the train, because they're taking you a longer distance from the Ellora Caves onto the next cave site, which is the Ajanta Caves.
Okay.
And so,
and is that all near the Aurangabad?
Yeah, this is the Ellora Caves outside of Aurangabad.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Aurangabad's sort of the village, sort of like the town nearby.
Yeah, it's the train depot for sure of the village. And then I think it's like 15 kilometers or something, 20 kilometers via private car. I think they take you from there to the site of the Ellora Caves.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then similarly, so this is what's kind of nice. So this starts off this tour mm-hmm. fairly relaxing, right? Because your first day is kind of spiritual river walk day in like a holy village to a vineyard. The next day is kind of like nature stuff with and cultural, historical, ancient history of the Ellora Caves. Mm-hmm. The third day, you're going to a different cave site called the Ajanta Caves. Mm-hmm. This is similar to the Ellora Caves. But where this is different is these are considered more of like the holy monastery kind of caves mm-hmm. where there's a lot of carved scripted writing in Sanskrit that tell the life of Buddha and is considered more of like a holier cave site. Mm-hmm. And so, but similarly at the Ajanta Caves depot from that day of the train, you're only going to do like a half day excursion. So you're mm-hmm. no meals outside of the train that day. It's also going to be breakfast, return for lunch, mm-hmm. and then, you know, unwind for dinner as you're like choo-chooing along the Indian countryside.
I see. Cool. I was reading here that the trains have a max speed of 75 kilometers per hour.
Okay.
That's
quite slow.
Just for passenger comfort. It's not because like they are capable of going faster, but if they go faster, then it could cause discomfort, like with the dining experience. It might cause like, you know,
shuffling around things.
Yeah, to shuffle around or to fall. Yeah. So yeah. I think it's more about like it goes that pace for people's comfort. So that makes sense then that the individual legs would be a little bit longer. So maybe like distance wise, the cities or these destinations aren't too far away. But because it's only going 75 kilometers per hour, which is like not even, it's like maybe 40 miles per hour or so.
Right.
So, yeah, that's, just wanted to clear that up just to give an idea of like the pace of the trip. So it's not just, it's like even the train is a slow train. So you're kind of,
right.
You know, it's more of a relaxed kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't seem like it covers great distance on mm-hmm. the loop round trip itinerary of the route, but it is kind of in the same regard, you know, that does cover some distance quite a bit and in some stretches of some segments of it.
Okay, so we did the Ellora and Ajanta Caves. I'm just going to stop you right there for a quick station idea. If you're just tuning in, this is 90.7 FM. This is KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. I've forgotten how to do station IDs. You're listening to Life Stamp Stories from Here and There, and today we are talking about the Maharashtra Splendor, a luxury train travel experience in the state of Maharashtra, India. And it starts in Mumbai and takes a loop around the state. We just covered a wine region, and then the Ellora and Ajanta Caves, which have some spiritual significance. So Tyson, what's the next destination?
So yeah, as you can see, it's definitely kind of leisure of what the first 3 days have been. So mm-hmm. I think they assume that you've kind of got itchy feet at this point. You know, you've done quite a bit of nature stops and everything. So mm-hmm. Kolhapur, where you'll ride the next morning, mm-hmm. is definitely going to be more of your day of hustle and bustle.
Okay.
And it's the cultural city.
It's a more urban destination.
Yeah, more urban destination, but also a very culturally rich city, which is known for its temples, its historical palaces, and like traditional arts and stuff, a lot of textiles and stuff like this.
Cool.
So you'll get there not till noon, but you kind of pack a lot in from like noon till dinner time once you get to Kolhapur. So this will be like a half day cultural exploration of Kolhapur. You'll start at one of the most famous royal palace museums there at 1 p.m. Not a lot of time to look around the museum, but you have about an hour there checking in all the royal architecture and the cultural significance of this place. Then you'll head to the city center for the local markets to buy the handmade Kolhapuri chapaus, which I think is like just traditional Indian silk clothing and stuff like this from the local markets and stuff. Then you'll have afternoon tea time with folk dancing in the Lavanaya and Sandhya styles.
Okay.
These are traditional like folk style dances for the region and stuff. So you'll watch a folk dancing show with the tea time for at those places. And then you'll take a sunset at the Mahalakshmi Temple at 5:15.
Okay.
After the folk show. And then after you spend about an hour or maybe an hour and a half there, they'll bus you back onto the train for a later dinner service that evening at 7 p.m.
Okay.
So it's a more definitely action-packed day, the day you make it to Kolhapur and stuff.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. So, you know, that day is a lot of like, you know, kind of city exploring, cultural sites and stuff. You'll probably be quite tired. And the day after this, you're probably going to want something that's a little more leisurely. So once you leave Kolhapur, the next day you're going to arrive in Goa.
In Goa. Okay.
Yeah. You know, and then the history behind Goa is it's like India's party capital, considered the most liberal part. Liberal and beautiful part of India.
So you're saying this is a relaxing destination?
Well, it is, still is during the daytime.
Okay.
Because all the partygoers are kind of asleep till potentially 2-3 p.m.
But this is also a city.
Yeah, Goa is like a city and a region. In this case, where they take you within the Goa region is to a seaside village called Fontaihas. And so Goa is known for its older Portuguese colonial rule in Goa. So everything's very kind of Portuguese in Goa in terms of architecture and different houses and stuff that are built along oceanfront properties and stuff like this within Goa. So, and then the beaches are great, and then, you know, but if one was traveling there not via this Splendor train that we're talking about, it's filled with nightclubs and everything, you know, that are pretty much go all night long and stuff, you know. It's kind of like the Ibiza of India, Goa is.
But so, you wouldn't stay there overnight. You're yeah, only there for one day.
As far as the train itself in this itinerary is concerned, you're going there to have a seafood lunch in Fontainehouse.
Okay.
At noon 15. And then you visit like a spice plantation.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so
what kind of spices?
You know, I didn't find that out, but I imagine, you know, India is so rich in spices, and especially in this part of southern Maharashtra, you know, I imagine it's quite prevalent for like cumin, cinnamon, cloves, you know, almost kind of Caribbean in that way in terms of like the spice variety that could probably be grown within the Goa region and stuff. So, yeah, so you'll do a spice plantation tour after your lunch, and then you'll get about 3 hours of relaxing beach time. Till sunset from about 3:30 to 6:30 and stuff, you know, in Goa. So that's a pretty like nice, chill, relaxing day.
Yeah,
you know,
it's nice.
Climate change, you know, you're definitely in a different climate once you had arrived at Goa.
So what is the climate like in Goa?
I think it would be similar to like a Caribbean climate to some extent, you know, or, you know, at...
It's a bit humid.
Maybe not warm. Quite that sweltering, like in February or March or something. It could be similar to like maybe San Diego or something, where you'll still enjoy the beach, but Yeah.
It's like warm and sunny, but maybe not like super humid.
Yeah. If you look at the map of India where Goa is, it is mm-hmm. pretty far south. It's not the most southern tip, like all the way down by the Sri Lanka or anything like that. Sri Lanka is definitely in the tropical temperate zone. Mm-hmm. I think Goa is somewhere kind of like in the semi-tropics to the tropics in terms of like its temperate zone. So I would probably consider it maybe it's safe to say it's almost identical to like Cabo.
Okay.
Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You know, so maybe not sweltering, but definitely great year round.
Yeah.
So
cool. So some spice plantation, some beach time. That sounds fun. And then you get
a seafood lunch before.
Oh, seafood lunch. What kind of seafood are you eating?
I'm not really sure. Actually, and I might not be totally accurate on the seafood part of it. I'm just assuming because it is Goa that they'll have probably certain things like, you know, curry salmon, Indian spice, probably curry seafood options and stuff. And also maybe with some Portuguese influence and stuff as well in terms of like the way they do seafood at this restaurant that you go to. But it is in the village of Fontainhas. And so I think, you know, if people are not on the pescatarian program, maybe they have other options that are just strictly vegetarian or, you know, lamb.
I see.
Yeah.
So then what's next after Goa?
This will be coming to your last day, and you'll be going along the Maharashtra coastline
Goa
because you're in southern Maharashtra. So you're going to
get some nice vistas.
Yeah, I think the train route should have some nice vistas and stuff, you know, after you leave the beach that evening on your way to arrive the next day at Sindhudurg. And in Sindhudurg is got more like ocean cliffs. And there's like an island fortress that they take you to off of the coast of Malvan.
Okay.
So they call this little coastal area, I think, once it gets kind of rockier and cliffier and stuff as you're heading back north, the coast of Malvan. And so at 9:15, they'll take you from the train after you've had your breakfast to Pinguli Village, which I believe is where you catch a ferry to this little island of... where by noon you're going to visit the Sawantwadi Palace Fortress, and then you're going to have like a proper Indian royal lunch at this like island fortress, like in the Indian Ocean kind of deal.
That's cool.
Or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, yeah, definitely like the royal ocean experience.
That's really cool. So it's a fortress out on the ocean.
Yeah, like
how do you get there? Do you take a boat?
That's what I'm saying. I think they ferry you from the Pinguli Village.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And if you look at the website,
what are you eating for
lunch? You'll see a lot of the information isn't entirely clear, so I think they're expecting you to call them so they can really sell you on it, all the things that are included.
But this is included in the tour, right?
This is all included in the tour. Okay. Yeah, but there was no information about this little island with the palace and how you get there. So regardless, you get there. I don't think they're going to fly you in with a helicopter. I think they're probably ferrying you from the Pinguli Village or something like this. But you have a royal lunch at the palace. And I think you just hang out like on that kind of rocky island and, you know, the cliffs and stuff like this and everything. I think the pictures kind of make it look a little bit that I saw. If you know in Slovenia, they have an island in the national park called Lake Bled. And then they have a castle on this island in this big lake.
Okay.
And so I think this is similar, except for it's actually in the Indian Ocean, where it's just a small little island with a royal fortress palace kind of, you know, on this rocky little island and stuff. And so you have a royal lunch there, do it, you know, completely traditional Indian royal style. And then after lunch and hanging out, they'll take you back to Pinguli Village and then, you know, drive you back to the train at 4 p.m. And stuff. And then, yeah, you're pretty much going to, you know, have your last night on the Maharashtra Splendor that evening as you take your final dinner on the train and then make the journey to arrive in Mumbai the final morning.
Cool.
So, yeah, pretty interesting, cool little itinerary, I thought. Probably one that a lot of people are not super familiar with. We always hear about the Siberian Express or the Orient Express.
Right. But this seems like definitely like a luxury experience, because I think even like the Siberian, like the Trans-Siberian Railway isn't that kind of luxury experience. It's just a train. You know, you just buy a ticket to ride
right.
the train.
It's a lot more of a hop on, hop off. It's not
it's not like you're having all of this stuff. Yeah. So this sounds like a definite like luxury experience that if you ever have the chance in your lifetime, sounds really amazing to do.
And probably good for the wealthy traveler that has a fear of people. And because people always talk about, you know, just traveling through the infrastructure of India being so chaotic and so noisy and so busy and so difficult to figure out how to
get. It's sort of all like planned out for you, I guess I can see. I mean, I've done tours before, and that's the nice thing about doing a tour is that your itinerary and everything is taken care of, so you don't really have to think about it. But I guess the downside is that you don't have that freedom. You know, like you have like, okay, you have 3 hours at the beach, you know,
yeah.
like everything is very regimented.
If I could afford it, I would, there's no way I would do this without committing to going to India for probably 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And then I would throw this whole thing in.
Yeah.
As part of it, you know, because I'd be like, well, if I'm already spending that much money, I am going to want to see some of the other regions of India and do some of my own freeform travel and stuff, you know. And then, you know, when I'm kind of exhausted with trying to navigate the bus systems or the train systems, then I just hand it all over to this thing.
Totally.
And then I'm like, all right, well, I'm just want to be pampered and taken care of. Mm-hmm. Good way to end, I think, maybe a 3 week excursion within India.
Yeah, for sure.
Or the region itself.
For sure.
So I think we probably should move on to trivia and comments. I'm going to quiz your brain, Joseph, to see how much you were listening today.
All right. All right, Harvey, let's take us away.
Okay, now let's move on to trivia and comments. Trivia time. Trivia time, hip hip hooray. Listener comments as well, handled the Life Stamps way, today and every day.
Thank you, as ever, Harvey, for that lovely trivia intro. If you are just tuning in, this is KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and you're listening to Life Stamps, Stories from Here and There. Today we covered the Maharashtra Splendor train route, and if you did not catch any of the earlier show, episode will be on Spotify this upcoming Sunday, so check us out, Life Stamps, Stories from Here and There. And now we are getting started with trivia and comments. Tyson has some difficult questions for me, which I'm probably going to fail at, and he's going to make fun of me for them. So let's get it over with, Tyson.
I mean, you did a great job of just talking about what we already talked about, so I feel like you're a master of everything I'm going to quiz you on today. Starting that off, we're going to have an easy question for you right now, Joseph, because...
Do your best.
Because, like, I'm going... I can feel your brain power just growing and becoming the genius that you are.
Uh-huh.
So, what's the best time of year to take the train odyssey?
See, this is what you do. You like to inflate my ego, and then you just ask a question that just really makes me feel like, you know, I don't know anything. But I will answer that one question. The best time to take it is like winter time, like November to February or March.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
October to March. We'll give you the point. Ding!
Woohoo!
1 point for Joseph.
Go me.
And what is the name of the Indian wine capital?
Like Kasi or something?
That's an angry goat saying, nope, you do not get the point.
What's it called?
So you got one ding and one meh.
Nashik.
Yeah, you cheated. It's too late.
No, I always kind of said Nashik, Kashik, yeah. You know.
What are the name of the folk dancing styles that you can see in Kolhapur?
Well, I mean, see, now you're just making me feel stupid.
No, I'm not. I'm just seeing if you know.
The name of the folk dancing styles. I'm not even going to try because I feel like that would be offensive. All right,
two goats for you.
what are they called?
Lavanaya.
Uh-huh.
And Sandhya.
Lavanaya and Sandhya.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And then with the wine region, there's Sula Vineyard, which you were talking about.
Well, the vineyard that you go to is the Sula Vineyard, but yeah. The wine region itself is Nashik.
Yeah, got it.
Yep. What is the name of the cave site that is comparable to Petra in Jordan? It was the first cave site that I mentioned.
The Ellora.
The Ellora Caves. Cool.
Ellora Caves.
Ding, ding.
Woohoo.
Meh, meh. That's your score.
Got it. Two dings and two mats.
Yeah, two goats.
Uh-huh.
Roughly how old are the Indian railways?
Like 160-ish years.
Ding, ding, ding. Meh, meh.
Yay.
No, not too bad. 3 for 2. Joseph, not so bad at all. What is Mumbai's most recognized contribution to the world?
Is it Bollywood?
Ding, 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 ding. Meh, meh. 4 for 2 today, Joseph.
I didn't want to, I didn't want to be like ignorant. Maybe there's something else because I'm just thinking entertainment, but okay.
Yeah.
Most recognized. Yeah.
And I mean, knows what Bollywood is. Pretty good. I mean, I didn't even really, give you a little factoid on that one. And you just kind of knew because you're so culturally rich.
Do you know where the B comes from in Bollywood?
No, actually.
So, you know, Mumbai has another name.
Yeah, the colonial name of Bombay.
Bombay, yeah. So I think that's why it's called Bollywood.
Why don't they change it to Mollywood?
That sounds fun.
Celebrate all famous Molly actresses.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking of. Molly as in the name of a person.
Yeah.
That's the only Molly I was thinking of.
Yeah, yeah. So, Mollywood, to commemorate all famous Mollies.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Anyways, who knows? Maybe, the Indian Film Board will, push to, make an
maybe.
Change.
I mean, Bollywood is already so iconic, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we've got some comments.
Going to the comments. All right.
Yeah. I think some of these are pretty interesting this week.
I was having fun with those trivia questions, but okay. All right. Let's do comments.
Yeah. Let's go to comments. I got my first one here from Antoinette Laveau from Lyon, France.
Mm-hmm.
She says...
Oh, I want to visit Lyon.
Yeah, so do I, actually. It seems like a less talked about, pretty cool French medieval city.
It's also like the third largest city in France.
It's the third? Oh, I thought for some reason it was the fourth, like Marseille and Nice were bigger.
No, so Marseille and Lyon are about the same size.
Okay.
So depending on who you ask, some people might say it's the second.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyways, she's asking... Tyson Joseph, give me tips for some of your most favorite hikes you've ever done in the world.
Favorite hikes I've ever done in the world. One of my... I'm going to say favorite because it's something that is memorable for me, is the... it's on Lantau Island in Hong Kong, which is the same island where the airport is. It's sort of a bigger island. And it's mostly, like, not urbanized. Like, there's a few, small villages and stuff, but it doesn't really have, like, a city presence as much. And there's a hike that you do that is, and it's, like, it used to be an ancient highway. They have steps that go up these, like, so many steps, and you're just, like, basically hiking up and down these hills. And the end of the hike... ends at the famous big Buddha statue. So you start...
How big is it? Is it like one of the really large ones that you would see?
Yeah, it's really... Well, it's elevated, so there's already a bunch of steps just to go up to see the Buddha. But then, yeah, the statue itself is like a really big statue. And I feel like it's one of my more memorable hikes that I've done just because... it's kind of cool to think about, like, this is the route that people went just to, like, transport like that was, you know, before like roads for cars and stuff.
Yeah.
And now it's like a big hiking trail, and you know, you end it with like, first there's all these like amazing views once you get to the peak.
So it's somewhat of a
around the island and like the harbor and everything, and then like you keep hiking and you get to the Buddha.
Yeah, that's really cool. And but it's somewhat of a subtropical climate, I imagine, so like your tip would probably be a lot of water.
Yeah, I would just suggest doing it more in the winter time. Yeah,
okay.
Like I feel like hiking is, you can probably start hiking like in October.
Okay.
Up until like April. Like April can be very rainy, but yeah, I feel like those are probably like probably for half the year is probably you know, it's going to be hot sometimes, but it's not going to be like, the humidity goes down a lot in the wintertime.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think for me, I have one in El Yunque rainforest within the island of Puerto Rico.
Oh, okay. Fine.
And yeah, so because when I read that question, that was the first one that came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And just packed for this trail, like, you know, proper rain gear. Rain boots are very important because it is a rainforest and it's higher elevation for the island.
Mm-hmm.
But in the southern part of the park of El Yunque, they have a trail to a waterfall that's called El Hippie.
Mm.
So it's literally just kind of named for, you know,
hippie, like the English word hippie?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Doesn't have a Spanish meaning. It's just what they call it. The El Hippie waterfall trail of southern El Yunque. And yeah, it's very much like a rugged trail with like wild bamboo and wild fauna and, you know, lots of Caribbean plant species and stuff. But incredibly like muddy in parts. You're definitely going to get like, you know, little mud puddles and stuff that you may have to traverse through and stuff. You'll hear the sound of the cookie frog adding a nice ambiance as you do this hike.
The cookie frog.
Yeah, it's a famous tiny little red frog in Puerto Rico that makes a sound that sounds like cookie, cookie. So it kind of sounds like a little baby parakeet or something, but it's actually the sound that the frog makes.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that frogs could make that kind of noise.
Yeah, you wouldn't know until you go to Puerto Rico or some other places where, you know, the species exists.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
but yeah, so, I mean, if you probably anywhere in El Yunque, really, you know, have proper, like, good footing to, you know, deal with, like, wetter trails and stuff. You know, there's plenty of waterfalls within El Yunque, but specifically I'm talking about from the southern area of the park if you do the El Hippie trail to the El Hippie waterfall. So
I think we have time for one more question, but we're about 53 minutes right now.
Okay, let me go over the four that I have here. One is from Jake Mesner from Cork in Ireland, one from Phil Crenshaw from Ottawa, and oh, this one's kind of interesting.
Okay.
Yuki Hashimaya from Kobe, Japan, asks, "Hey, Tyson and Joseph, what was one of your most intriguing technology discoveries while traveling?"
Technology discoveries?
Yeah. Did you ever go somewhere and just be like, "Oh, that's crazy. What's this weird machine? What does it do?" You know, or like just maybe even something like, you know, just... it could be even something like the way you buy a train ticket at a famous train station or something.
It's funny because this questioner is from Japan, because I feel like I'm thinking of Japan in terms of like, it's more just like, not like the tech is super advanced, but just the way they use technology. Where it's like using a vending machine to order food at a restaurant.
Right.
It's like you do the vending machine and then you get the ticket and then you give the ticket to someone.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like or another one was like a revolving sushi, like, you know, like the revolving sushi restaurants.
It was an automat?
What do you mean?
You know, like a conveyor vending machine. Yeah,
so you know, like the conveyor sushi restaurants.
Yeah.
So then there was one where it was like you can order like sushi to your table through a monitor, and so you just order what you want, and then when it comes to your table, it like makes a noise like ding 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 ding, like to let you know that your food is there.
Yeah, yeah.
So just like little things like that, where it's like, you know, if you ever want to know what the world could look like without servers.
Right.
That's an example.
Yeah. Very much like, robotic servers and stuff. I think we have a restaurant in Portland that actually doesn't have a wait staff that brings you food with a robot.
Yeah.
On 82nd, I can't remember.
But this is even like more automated because you still have to put in your order with the server.
Right.
But and then the robot comes and gives it to you.
Oh.
So this is like totally is automated. Yeah. You just like put in your order through the monitor and then it just comes to you. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So kind of a ripoff in my case.
But sorry, I that was an example from Japan. I know that you probably are aware of all these things. So I feel like that was a
Yuki's probably curious of what stuff's implemented in other parts of the world that's unique and stuff. It was kind of a ripoff but kind of an interesting experience for me just the same. But the I'm trying to remember the name of the railway station now, but in Barcelona, I think it's just called the El Prat train station that handles all the southern lines or whatever. I spent $1.50 to use the toilet there. But it was cool.
Which is like fairly common in European countries to have to pay to use the toilet, right?
Right, but this one had so many self-cleaning features.
Oh.
So I videotaped it because it was like watching like a washing machine for your dishes.
Okay.
You know, in real time after you're done, it's like this little scrubber thing came out and scrubbed the toilet. It had these little robotic arms and it just did like two different cleaning solutions and stuff after use and stuff. So, and then it does this thing with the seat where it's like it kind of moves to give you more comfort when you're sitting on it.
Interesting.
And so I found a robo toilet to be, you know, probably one of the more interesting and bizarre and weird kind of technological discoveries I ever had while traveling and stuff.
Yeah.
But and I don't know if they still exist, but if they do, you'll find them at the main train station in Barcelona.
Yeah, that's so interesting. A self-cleaning toilet.
Yeah.
Well, we are out of time, so thank you all for listening. This is KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. You've been listening to Life Stamps. If you only caught part of the episode today, you can check us out on Spotify. This episode will be up on our Spotify account on Sunday, this upcoming Sunday. So just look for the Maharashtra episode. Until next time, thank you all for listening. This is Life Stamps, and take us away, Harvey.
Take us away, Harvey, and thanks again, listeners, for this week's show on Maharashtra Splendor, the train.
You have been listening to Life Stamps, stories from here and there on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Join us in 2 weeks for our next episode. Until next time, happy traveling. You are listening to Spill
on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Keep it cute, babies. You're listening to Between the Covers on KBOO Listener Supported Radio.